Entrepreneurs, business owners, professionals who seek excellence, bringing the business classroom to you. It's the Business Builders Show. Here's Marty Wolf.
We still got a long way to go. Yes, we all got a long way to go.
Welcome to the Business Builders Show with Marty Wolf, the show for entrepreneurs, business owners, and business leaders. I'm Marty Wolf, your host for the Business Builders Show, and along with my executive producer, DC Taylor, we will be your guides on this learning journey. I'm proud to let you know we record this show in the studios of 94.3 FM The Talker, which is part of Bold Gold Media, and we are in my hometown of Scranton, Pennsylvania. Hooray for Scranton, Pennsylvania, right, DC?
That's right, making it happen here in northeastern Pennsylvania.
We are. The Business Builders Show is distributed by C-Suite Radio. That's c-suiteradio.com. You can find the Business Builders Show and many other fine shows on C-Suite Radio. So we have a special guest lined up. Is she on the line?
Yes.
And our special guest, our special guest is Morgan Simon. Hi, Morgan.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm thrilled. This is... I love this topic, so I'm going to feel comfortable talking about it to a point, because it's kind of heavy for me. But we're gonna put this in plain English, right, Morgan? As we talk,
absolutely, the only kind I speak.
Okay, good. So we're going to talk about Morgan's book. The book is titled "Real Impact: The New Economics of Social Change" by Morgan Simon. And I'm going to read something right out of the introduction of the book, which I think sets us up, Morgan, for a good discussion. So here's what it says. Every generation lives on the cusp of major social transformations. Our generation is witnessing revolutionary changes in the role of capital in society, with trillions of dollars migrating toward positive social and environmental purposes. It would be a tragedy to let this moment pass without attempting to maximize its potential as conscious consumers of impact investment. I think that sets us up, Morgan, for a great conversation about your book, which again is Real Impact: The New Economics of Social Change. So welcome again to the show, Morgan.
Thank you so much.
Let's start this way. What do you mean by impact investing? Am I saying the right words?
Absolutely. You're saying the right words, and it's behind the concept that every dollar that we spend or invest is a vote for the type of society that we want to have, right? So I imagine a number of your listeners, right, make that decision every day in the grocery store of, am I going to get the normal or the organic milk for my kids? And am I going to figure out, is it the cage-free or the pasture-raised, or you know, what type of egg is the best? Really thinking through the social and environmental implications of the purchases we make. And then the next level of that is thinking about that every time we go to the bank, of really, where did your money spend the night? Is it supporting the types of values that you care about? And then for the entrepreneurs out there, really thinking through, are there ways that I can really achieve my social mission as a person through my business, as opposed to thinking I'll just do philanthropy later, you know, after I get wealthy? Someone had first had asked Warren Buffett in a business school presentation if it made sense to, you know, focus your money on building wealth and then giving it away, or if you could really infuse social values in your business from the start. And he said, well, that's kind of like saving sex for old age, and that's not a very good idea.
See, now we're talking basic English. I understood that part. Yeah.
Right.
And drives the point home really, really well. Morgan Simon is a widely recognized leader in impact investment who builds bridges between finance and social justice. That's what we're going to talk about. Over the past 17 years, she has influenced over $150 billion in capital. She has worked with the United Nations in Honduras in corporate reform with Forest Ethics, and in domestic microfinance with the Women's Initiative for Self-Employment. You have been very busy, Morgan Simon. So talk to us about, I gave a brief intro, talk to us about your career or your journey which led to you wanting to write this book or believing it was necessary. Talk to me about that.
Sure. So I've spent 17 years in the field of impact investing, you know, before it even really had that name. And it was because as an activist, as someone who cared deeply about social and environmental justice, of thinking about how can we be most effective. And when you think that there's 196 trillion circulating in the global economy every day, that's where I wanted to spend my time, right, in terms of having as much influence as possible. Mm-hmm. And started to work with a number of endowments and foundations and high net worth families, and mm-hmm. looking at what are ways of migrating money to be able to serve those sorts of values. And I wrote the book because I think a lot of us have a lot more economic power than we recognize. That mm-hmm. sometimes we think, oh, an investor is just someone who, you know, is a millionaire, and you know, that's who really gets to have influence over society, as opposed to thinking, as I said before, that, you know, every dollar that we invest is a vote for the type of society that we want, and that we need to reclaim the economic power that we have. So mm-hmm. for instance, if you went to college, right, your alma mater probably has a couple hundred million to billion dollars in their endowment. Mm-hmm. How is that being invested, and is in a way that reflects your values? Mm-hmm. Where you bank, how you choose to run your business, right? Yeah. So yeah. What I provide in Real Impact is a way for people who may have thought, well, this isn't really for me, I'm not an investor, to get to see what are the ways that they can really think about infusing values into their businesses and into their personal investments.
Well, let's talk about your personal journey in terms of your college experience. So you went to school in the Philadelphia region, I understand, and you were involved in something. Tell us that story.
Very much so. So I went to Swarthmore College just outside of Philadelphia. And Swarthmore had a committee on investor responsibility, which is students who are looking at the way that the endowment was invested. And people may be familiar with the divestment campaigns around Vietnam and South Africa, and divestment in general, saying, you know, you want to get out of stuff that's bad. And I think what people sometimes forget is that you can also proactively invest in stuff that's good. And you can also use your power as a shareholder in corporations to change their practices. So when I was a fairly precocious 19-year-old, I convinced the school to file a shareholder resolution at Lockheed Martin. And that meant myself and the 70 or so year old VP of finance at Swarthmore flying out to San Diego to present at the shareholder meeting to the CEO and board of directors, saying that we thought, as did many of their employees, that they should be providing equal benefits uh-huh. to GLBT families as to anyone else. And that as shareholders, telling 10% of your potential workforce that you're not welcome here is just a bad business decision. Uh-huh. And we won that campaign. Lockheed made an announcement in the Wall Street Journal that they were going to change their policy to start giving domestic partner benefits and to add sexual orientation in their non-discrimination clause. You know, this was at a time before I think there was much broader acceptance of gay rights in the U.S. Uh-huh. And for me, it was really this defining moment of seeing how economic power could create social change. Yeah. And that it didn't matter that I, as a college student, had $5 in my pocket,
yeah.
but that I was connected to a very influential institution. And I think all of us are one way or another, right? And that's the power that we can harness.
Yeah, like, for instance, when I'm in New York City, I use Lyft and not Uber. So that's kind of what we're talking about, right? I have made the conscious decision to use Lyft. Now, that's a small microcosm, I know, but we'll get more detail. But that's kind of what you're talking about a little bit. But I don't want to sidetrack us. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, a little, just to say that, you know, you're one of 300,000 people who made that decision.
There you go.
in the last couple months. And it really is that tidal shift that you're seeing of consumers saying, by the companies that are taking my dollars.
Yeah.
And that means that it's becoming much more common practice for companies to need to have that license to operate, essentially, in terms of their social environmental practices. So
yeah.
I think what's great is it means for entrepreneurs, you don't have to hide your values, right? You have the opportunity to really make that front and center, and to know that there's an investment community that supports you in that, and consumers that are going to be extra loyal as a result.
Well, what I just thought of was, I just, before speaking with you, I was speaking with Sean Askenosi, and he has Askenosi Chocolates in I think it's Springfield, Missouri. And, you know, another interesting book, interesting story, not directly connected, but making decisions about your business in the view that you're talking about. So, okay, so let me mention the book again. Real Impact, The New Economics of Social Change. I'm speaking with Morgan Simon. Morgan, is there a way that you want people to connect with you? Your website, a website, social media? Is there a way you want people to stay in touch with you?
Sure. So as long as they remember my name, it's at Morgan Simon on Twitter. It's morgansimon.com. Are great ways to be able to reach me.
That should be pretty simple. Okay. So let's go here. So this whole idea you have in the book, you talk about some success stories or a success story, or there's others, but let's talk about one. We'll call it success stories in terms of social investing and maybe something that didn't turn out so well. Talk to me about those two stories.
Sure. So what this comes back to, you read at the beginning a section about the idea of being a conscious consumer of impact investment.
Yeah.
And it's that if you, you know, step one, I would say for all of us is talk to your financial advisor and the question of, hey, is there a social or environmental option? You know, whether it's in public equities or money markets or, you know, there are products that are out there, but it's not enough to just check the social box and then walk away. Right. Because we need to make sure that there's real accountability to the communities that are impacted by these projects. Mm-hmm. And that means really having a deeper thoughtfulness about what impact can mean. Mm-hmm. And some of the examples I give in the book, there was a $550 million project to build Latin America's largest wind farm, which, you know, sounded, if you're an average investor, sounds really great, right? The opportunity to support renewable energy, to do so in a poor state of Mexico, where you could create job opportunities for indigenous peoples, and, you know, projected 20% returns, right? Sounds, you'd invest
sounds
in that,
great.
Right?
Sounds great.
Sounds great. Yep. Sounded great to everyone except for the people who lived there,
the community,
who's as indigenous people spoke Zapoteco, didn't speak Spanish, didn't always know what they were signing, and found out that with this massive project projected to make billions in profits, that they were being offered $50 a hectare for their land. So community members started putting up roadblocks. The police started interfering and 12 people were shot.
Yikes.
And you started to have indigenous communities putting out statements saying, stop the violence, intimidation, and hostility caused, you know, not by by terrorism, right? Caused by wind energy.
Wow.
And I would say that those are three words that, you know, as people who care about social impact, we never want connected to ourselves, right?
Yeah, no, no, you don't want that. Yeah.
Exactly. So it goes back to making sure when you're looking at a project, it's great if the banker on the 40th floor of the Manhattan high rise says it's social. But what do the people on the ground say? And
yeah.
How do you make sure
that
institutions are really being thoughtful?
And Morgan, you keep in the book and in that particular case, just reiterating the importance of the community and the community's involvement in the participation from the get-go. So that was kind of a negative story there. Do you have a positive story to share with us?
Yes, I do. And one that I'll point to is the New Era Windows and Doors Cooperative in Chicago, Illinois. You know, at a time in U.S. history where I think many of us are concerned about job growth and opportunity for all, both globally and certainly for Americans, this was a story where 17 workers in a sustainable windows factory were threatened with job loss based on the decisions of a private equity firm, right, of finance kind of making decisions over people.
Mm-hmm.
And with financing from the working world, a fund for worker-owned cooperatives based in New York, these workers were able to buy out the factory and are now the 17 very proud owners of this window factory.
Yeah.
It's now the only minority-owned manufacturing facility in the whole state of Illinois that is predominantly Black and Latino employees.
Beautiful.
And when you look at income disparities in the U.S., right, income disparities are one thing, but asset disparities of people's opportunity to own businesses and own houses is massive within communities of color.
Yes.
So the working world has been doing fantastic work of helping predominantly within communities of color, people be able to start worker-owned co-ops where then you have a much broader distribution of ownership within society. So that's one of the funds we're quite excited about.
That's beautiful. I feel good about this. Now, Let me ask you this. Is everybody in finance as excited about this stuff as you are? Is there a return on investment? Talk to me about that.
Absolutely. So one of the things that's been very exciting over the past decade is that there's been numerous studies coming out from very traditional financial actors like Deutsche Bank and the Harvard Business Review that you can get market or superior returns, given that companies that tend to take sustainability into mind, both in terms of the planet and the workforce, tend to have better long-term outcomes. When you even think about in the context of some oil companies that have less than 10 years of oil reserves, is that where you want to have your retirement, right? Of a company that doesn't know if it's going to be in business in 10 years? So I think you're seeing in terms of long-term sustainability and investing that those companies come out on top. And that's what numerous studies have proved. You've also been seeing, you know, just recently, people like Larry Fink of BlackRock coming out with very strong statements saying.
I saw that. I saw that. Yeah. That was heavy.
So that was essentially saying that social and environmental and governance questions need to be taken into account in all investment decisions and that this is of critical business risk. So I think what's great about impact investment is that you can be the bleeding heart liberal who, you know, is going to make great choices around their values and everything they do, regardless of the financial hit. Or you could be someone who doesn't care at all, but just cares about profits. And both of you will likely wind up in social investing just because it's that great mix of being the right thing to do while also being very profitable.
I love that. I love the way you said that. Fantastic. Yeah, that's crazy. Go ahead.
I will say at the same time, sorry, going back to being conscious consumers, that for those of us who are really interested in this question of asset disparity, right, and the need to really contribute assets to communities that have been historically extracted from over generations and generations, that at the same time, we are going to need some of that wealth to trickle down and be distributed. And that means that sometimes maybe we shouldn't make the highest return if it's going to be damaging other people. So I think the other factor that a lot of people think about is redefining how you think about legacy, right? So when you're saving for retirement, yes, it's because you want to take your grandchildren to the movies, but you also want to be able to say that you didn't do that by taking it off the back of some other child. Right, that you can really feel good that you made your money in a way that supported others in society.
Yeah, here's another distinction I'd like for you to make and to make clear to us. I guess the difference, the comparison or conflicts, I guess, between what we think of as typically charitable giving as opposed to impact investing. Talk to me about the contrast there, or is there a contrast? Tell me more about that. Explain it to me.
Sure. So the first thing is a matter of scale, right? So U.S. foundation giving is about $46 billion a year. That sounds like a lot, but it's not very much compared to the $196 trillion, right, that circulates in the global economy every day. Mm-hmm. So you wind up in this very David and Goliath fight, right, that if I am, and this had come up very publicly for a number of charitable institutions, if I'm, for instance, doing philanthropy for solar energy development while I'm investing in fossil fuels, that's really kind of fighting at cross purposes, right?
Exactly.
And you're going to wind up in this David and Goliath fight that you just can't win.
Yeah.
So I think the big difference is that in impact investment, you're able to put all of your dollars on the table. In the same way, you know, I make donations annually, but I certainly invest a lot more in terms of what I'm saving. And I think that is true for most people, right? So activating more of your dollars. And then the second, you know, very simple thing is that philanthropy, you know, maybe you get some tax benefit from it, but you give it away and it doesn't come back, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the value of investing is that I can invest, for instance, in that worker-owned co-op, and then I can turn it around and give it to the next co-op, right? So in terms of sustainability of sources for social change, the fact that you can recycle that money again and again is extremely compelling.
Wow, you've practiced. You have this down really, really well. I'm speaking with Morgan Simon. Her book is Real Impact, The New Economics of Social Change. Again, if you remember her name, Morgan Simon, you can find her on social media. Morgan, believe it or not, we need to wind up our conversation. You hit some things at the beginning of the discussion about what we can do as individuals, which I think is the challenge. So if you're okay with that, let's talk about some things that maybe, let's hit more on that. You know, this sounds lofty, but really deciding to go with Lyft instead of Uber is an economic decision, is it not? That's impacting long terms. And give me some other examples.
Absolutely. And in the book, there's a chapter that has what I call four easy steps for an ick-free life. And that, is that feeling of knowing you support values in one space of your life, but not within your investment dollars. And to give a bit of a sneak preview, one is to really think hard about where you're banking. And does that bank reflect your values? So if you don't know where your money spends the night, presume you're not going to like it. Right. And when you look at institutions that are out there, if you look up your local community bank or credit union, opportunities to really know that your money is supporting local providers. And then the second, if you have a retirement fund, of just posing the question, whether at your work or at your bank, is there a social or environmental option? And getting to, you know, evaluate that impact and see if it feels real to you. But I think often when we turn over our money to a financial advisor or to a retirement account, we treat it like it's not ours anymore. Mm. Right? We kind of give up that control. And I think it's important to take that back, to say, this is my money and I care about the values that it represents. And therefore, a financial advisor, your job is to find the products that are going to serve that mission. And those products are readily out there, right, that we're seeing at this point, one in every $10 is in some sort of screen fund. Mm-hmm. So lots of options are out there, but it's often just about taking control of your money, you know, remembering it's your money, not theirs.
I so much want to say the name of a bank, but I'm not going to. I'm going to pass over that.
That you love or hate.
No, that I don't like. I'm on local banks, and I want to use the phrase again that you used several times. Where does your money spend the night? Where does your money spend the night? I love that thought process. I think that's strong.
So I have to credit New Resource Bank with the phrase, where does your money spend the night, which is a community bank out of San Francisco.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that's where that came from. That's cool. All right. So we need to wrap up. So Morgan Simon has been my guest. Her book is Real Impact, The New Economics of Social Change. Morgan, thanks so much for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
So thank you for listening to the Business Builder Show with Marty Wolf, reminding you that this show and many other shows are fine shows are available on csuiteradio.com. So on behalf of myself, Marty Wolf, your host, and DC Taylor, my executive producer, thank you for listening to the Business Builder Show.
Bringing the business classroom to you, it's the Business Builder Show with Marty Wolf.